Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Cale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sajid D. Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 148, being recorded on the 13th of October, 2016, with special guest Anna Roth. I'm Sajid. Skype with me. I have Cale, Evan, and our special guest Anna. And before we get Anna to explain what she does at Microsoft, it's a very interesting topic. We've been kind of dying to have somebody from the team to talk about cognitive services, and I'm glad that she could join us today to give us a lowdown on that. But before that, let's jump into a whole bunch of updates. It's been another busy week, guys.
Yeah, it's the post-Ignite rush, I guess.
Yeah, yes. It's like as if that wasn't enough, and now we have a whole lot more.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thank both Evan and Cale for putting a whole bunch of the updates in the show notes. So you guys want to start with something?
Yeah, I'll start with the ultra performance gateway for ExpressRoute. Right. What we've heard from our customers is the high performance gateway, which caps out at 10 megabits, was not enough. They needed more, and so we have ultra performance. I will have to admit that I did, as soon as I saw this name, I emailed one of the PMs that I know and said, so what's next, like the ludicrous performance gateway? we have high performance, ultra performance, I don't know.
They're going to run out of adjectives or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Now, the one thing I did notice, though, because it came up on our internal discussions, this particular thing. So you can't set this high performance, ultra high performance thing with the ARM template. I believe you have to do it through the portal. For some reason, you can only set the regular one, and then you have to upgrade it to this ultra high performance thing in the portal. So just a little tidbit there.
Oh, yeah, I actually didn't know that. I'll have to let my support colleagues know so that they don't run into that. I do know there is a limitation. The other limitation that I do know of is that you are limited to certain data centers because it needs to be a certain underlying virtual machine SKU.
Right.
Right, underlying virtual machine size, and that size is not available everywhere. There's also some limits about you can't go from – I should have this in front of me or in my head, but I don't. You can't go, I think, from the basic one all the way up to the ultra perf.
Right.
You actually have to delete the existing and then replace again, because you got to make sure that your VM gets deployed into one of our data centers and clusters that has these, really large virtual machines.
And the other thing I noticed, and you probably know this, is that it takes a while to set this up. It takes in the order of many minutes to get one of those set up. So it's not, you have to be careful that if you're going to do it, just make sure you got it right. That's one of the reasons they don't have it in the ARM template, because if you by mistake you do
oh,
it, you, you know, it's going to take
yeah.
you like 20 minutes and then you realize, oh, I did the wrong
yeah.
one.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's that 20 minutes is actually true for any initial deployment. Resize
right.
is fast,
yeah.
but the initial deployment is true no matter what size you're using. But yeah, absolutely. This isn't the kind of thing you go, hey, I want ultra performance and just, click a setting and you're up and running. This is, you got to plan for this, definitely.
Cool. That's a good one. And Cale, what do you like in the recent updates?
We got a couple things. One, I just think is funny because I like the name, the Mean Stack. So we had LAMP before, and then we had this LAMP, and now we have Mean. So you can run a Mean Stack on Azure, which is pretty awesome. But basically that means Mongo, Express, Angular, and Node. So an entire stack for an application from the client side through the web server to the back end. But it actually is a pretty good article, albeit the name's kind of funny, but it's a pretty good article about how to kind of configure this and set this up using the IaaS approach and then using some of the higher level services. So it's something to take a look at if you're building applications, especially web-based type applications that we're used to. On Azure, so we'll drop that out there. The other one that's kind of technical, and actually it kind of ties into today's thing, is it was on the Cortana Intelligence and Machine Learning blog, was an article about deep neural networks on Azure. So it's kind of a deep dive into that. So if you're interested in the discussion that we have today here and want to dive a little bit more into the machine learning aspects and those things. It's a really good article about how to configure some of those things.
Okay, yeah, and cool. Also, I guess related to cognitive services, there's a name update for the cognitive services in the invoices now. So that's something we'll put in the show notes. It's just they go by slightly different names now. The couple of things that I like is this app service. You know, app service is one of my favorites, and now they have a Linux as an option. You know, we all
yeah.
It was always on Windows. And now they've started introducing the Linux support. For starters, you could kind of spin up like a Node application on Linux natively. You know, it's not running on Windows. So I thought that was really nice that they have that in there. And also kind of related to app service as well. I mean, I think it goes without saying, and Evan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure app services perhaps our most popular service, right?
It's, yeah, if it's not the most, it's certainly up there. I know it's one of the fastest growing. Just
right.
Because it really makes deploying easy,
yeah.
And brings a ton of functionality. You know, I guess maybe we should tell our audience that you know, we had Christina Compe on maybe 3 weeks ago,
yeah.
And we actually had to cut out because she accidentally disclosed this right in the middle of the session, and apparently this is what they were working on. So we didn't want to get her in trouble, so we had to snip it out.
That's right. Yeah, on the Java podcast, correct?
Yeah.
Just related to that, since the app service is such a popular service, they've come up with I guess like a service companion. I suppose
sometimes
a mobile app,
right? Yeah.
So you can keep on top of your service. You know, if you're an administrator or something like that. So I thought that was pretty good. There's a preview of that service companion app out there right now. What else we got? Let's see. I think PowerShell updates. Kale, you saw that?
Yeah, I guess there's some breaking changes. So something to definitely look out for: the Azure PowerShell 3.0. So that's out there now with a bunch of enhancements. I don't know the exact details about which ones are breaking, but it did say there were some breaking changes in there. So if you have a lot of library of scripts that you've written using these things, you might want to take a look at that to make sure, you know, when you do the upgrade to 3.0, that it's not going to break any of your flows or anything.
Right.
The other one is there's a thing on here about Azure Government. It's kind of a big article that kind of goes through some of the pieces that are changing there on the Azure Government side, enhancements, some of the features that maybe are already in the public version that are starting to make their way over to the government cloud, as well as some pricing updates and regions and things like that.
Yeah, I know we're working really hard to keep that more up to date with everything else. I know the engineering teams that I talk to are just, you know, working really, really hard to get that stuff out there and up to par with the rest of public Azure.
And
the one about backup, Evan, might I know we had your friend on a while back about the backups, and it looks like they're hosting one of those AMA sessions out there on the internet. Ask me anything.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to see who's doing that. I'll have to look into that. I missed that until now. Just saw that.
I think it's the 20th of October, so a week or
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Interesting. Cool.
Evan, I thought you might be interested in the Azure SQL temporal tables availability. Did you see that?
Yeah, this is the feature that's in the SQL Server on-premises. And now it's, you know, again, there's, you know, closer and closer feature parity between Azure SQL DB and SQL Server on-prem SQL Server. And this just kind of brings that capability to, again, kind of look, run your queries over time, right? And
yeah.
And get consistent data.
Yep. And then there's the Azure Stream Analytics that has a new update. You know, I think they're just kind of migrating to the new portal, the Stream Analytics service. And one of the things that they have in there is the ability, it's like a little query window that they have in the browser. So you can pop right in there and do a select query, you know, once you've set up your inputs and outputs, just to make sure that everything's working right, you know. So you don't have to actually use your tools. You can just do it straight in the browser itself just to make sure everything's working. So I thought that was a nice thing. And there's a nice blog post by our old friend Ryan Crocore. You remember he was
yeah.
on us for DocumentDB. He was on the show way back when. So it looks like he's getting involved with Stream Analytics now, which is cool.
Yep, definitely.
What else we got? I think that kind of covers it, right?
Yeah, that's
Yep.
the big ones that caught my attention.
Those are the big ones. All right. So then let's kind of turn the mic over to our special guest today, Anna Roth. Anna, well, thank you for joining us today. And would you mind just giving our listeners a quick background about what you do at Microsoft and things like that?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the show. So
Happy to.
I'm on the Microsoft Cognitive Services team. And so we have 22 REST APIs that we expose that help developers use, very high quality computer vision, speech, language, knowledge, and search technology from Microsoft. So we've exposed, a bunch of different APIs in the area of machine intelligence. The work comes from Microsoft Research, from Microsoft's Cloud and Enterprise division, and from Bing. And we've basically taken, kind of the best technology across those divisions in machine intelligence and exposed them as very easy to use REST APIs. So kind of the premise is that, you don't need to be, or you shouldn't have to be a machine learning expert or work at Microsoft to have access to some of this very cool technology.
Anna, have you, like, how did you wind up in this particular group? What was your path in here, so to speak?
Through tremendous luck, when I came to Microsoft, I started off in Bing, and after about a, so this was roughly 3 years ago, and after about a year and a half, I was looking for jobs. I had done a bunch of interviews. I was deciding between four different teams, and then my manager at the time was like, "You've got to talk to this other guy." The other guy was not hiring, but he was like, "You've got to talk to this other guy," who turned out to be my current manager, and completely convinced me to work on what was then Project Oxford. So this was actually before Project
Oh,
Oxford
yeah.
even
Okay.
launched.
Yeah, I've heard that name. I didn't realize that's what this, I hadn't made the connection that that's what this turned into. Okay.
So Project Oxford was the Microsoft Research sort of collection of APIs, and this year at Build, we announced that we had not only taken Project Oxford, but also APIs from Bing and from the CNE and turned it into Microsoft Cognitive Services, a fuller kind of offering in machine intelligence.
Now, what's the like, if you were to give our listeners a sense for the sweet spot where cognitive services fit, like, if we have a lot of enterprise customers listening to this podcast, and what's the sweet spot for a typical enterprise customer to use these services? I know there's 22 of them, and I'm sure there's a lot of opportunity, but if they were to, what's the easiest way for them to kind of get their hands dirty, so to speak, with cognitive services?
Absolutely. So first, I want to call out that we actually have interactive demos for almost all the APIs on our website at microsoft.com/cognitive. And I've been amazed as we kind of show these to developers from a variety of enterprises and ISVs, how they tend to just kind of light up when they actually kind of see the demo and say, "Oh, I could use this for my industry doing XYZ." But when we thought about cognitive services in general, most of these services are machine intelligence algorithms that are very generalizable. So something like face recognition or face identification, where there's a wide variety of different industries where it makes sense that you might want to recognize who is the person in front of the camera. Similarly, speech to text, text to speech. LUIS, or our Language Understanding Intelligence Service, which is a service that makes it really easy to build an application that can take arbitrary natural language inputs, like an arbitrary sentence, an arbitrary command, and map that to a set of intents and entities that you've defined. So most of the APIs are kind of off-the-shelf models, really kind of appropriate for general solutions. And then there are a handful where you're actually kind of training or improving your own model. So, for example, Lewis, I just talked about, you have it recognize the particular scenarios for your application. So, for example, we had one company that was looking at building out an application where you could ask sort of sports statistic questions. So, how many passes did this or that athlete do this year? And they used Lewis to make it super easy for them to interpret sort of arbitrary questions and figure out what statistics somebody was asking for. in that vein, we also have Chris, our custom recognition intelligence system, which is for speech. So this gives you speech to text, but you can customize it for a particular audio profile. So, you know, the microphone or the kind of surroundings, or a particular language model. So let's say your industry has a particular jargon or set of words you want to be able to recognize. Chris lets you do those kind of customizations.
Yeah, I'm curious, does it feedback into itself then too? So if you deploy, we have a huge service out here, right, servicing all these requests, and is there some sort of feedback mechanism where me as the end user, I'm like, oh yeah, that was wrong, and I can go in and kind of tweak, like something like Lewis, and I can go in
sure.
and tweak it, and you guys can use that to go forward next time the next customer won't hit that same thing, you know?
So for something like Lewis, you know, you're training kind of, you're building something custom for your own application. So with Lewis, you're giving it a handful of examples of each intent that you want to recognize, but you've actually hit the nail on the head for the thing that Lewis does that's really cool. So when you are using Lewis, which, you know, is the service where you pick a couple of intents. So for example, if you have an IoT kind of scenario, it might be turn on or off the TV or play a particular music artist or an application. It could be like that sports example that I gave. You know, you've picked a couple of intents and you've trained Lewis by giving it a handful of example sentences. But Lewis actually is going to then store the text coming in to your endpoint. So, you know, at the end of it, you kind of have an endpoint that you call with a certain piece of text. Lewis will store that text, and even better, it'll suggest to you which texts you should go label to help improve your model over time. So, for example, you know, if you train an application and let's say lots of people all try to give it the same command, and Lewis does not have a high confidence interpretation of what the intent is, it'll actually kind of bubble that up and tell you sort of maybe you should label this and tell us what people mean when they say this, so that you can, you know, improve the quality of your interpretations over time.
Mm. That's cool.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, so this is really interesting to me because my wife is in health psychology, and she's actually working on her doctoral. And one of the things she has to do is she interviews a bunch of, you know, subjects, and then she has to analyze their interview. Both, she has to transcribe that, and then she has to run and analyze that looking for content and themes and patterns. And today there's some highly specialized software to do that. It sounds like the, you know, if you look at the speech to text, and then I forget what the other one was called, but the, you know, it sounds like some of what we're building with these cognitive services are really building a much, much larger scale kind of self-learning, self-improving thing to do the same thing. Is that the right way to think about this?
Yeah, so my advice to anybody that's looking at a particular domain or scenario is always actually to kind of give it a try.
Yeah.
You know, one of the nice things is that we make it super, super, super easy to get started. So with Lewis, which is the one that's, you know, taking a sentence and finding an intent, you really only need, you know, a couple tens of examples to get something good enough to prototype with. With Chris, you need a little more transcribed audio. But, you know, it's quite exciting that we actually make it super easy to kind of get started. So if somebody kind of comes to me and says, oh, I want to try the computer vision API, here is my scenario. Oh, I want to try Lewis, here is my scenario. You know, I basically always tell them that the best thing to do is actually try it out. You know, the results are often extremely good, but the best way to know if, you know, the models that we're exposing are appropriate for your situation is actually to give it a shot. And we make it, you know, with lots of sample code, very, very easy to do this.
Yeah, cool. That now I have yet another side project to go play with.
Yeah, actually, I was having fun with the cognitive website, as Anna was mentioning. And so one of the things that we did is, for this particular show, when the listeners are listening to it, as the preamble to the show, we have a little, an introduction music and some information about the show. And I used the Zira text-to-speech feature on the website, you know, where I put in the text and it gave me a computerized voice, which was pretty good actually, quite human sounding, and I kind of mix it up with some music, and so they'll be listening to that at the start of the show. But it was very easy, though, I got to say that. I think Evan, you mentioned that you were impressed how well she pronounced your last name, right?
Yeah, I mean, hardly. I mean, a lot of people don't get it, and clearly, very rarely do the automated systems get my last name right. And so it was. I know you said you had to tweak it just a little
Just
bit,
a little bit, but it did a pretty good job. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was really impressed the first time I heard that. Given the minimal effort you said you put into it to get something that was that, realistic sounding.
Yep.
So I couldn't be happier to hear that. And one thing I think it's important to actually call out is that, a lot of this technology really is quite tested. So part of our team's goal is to take technology that has historically been exposed through Cortana, through Xbox, through Windows, through Bing, and make it accessible to third-party developers. There's all of this great work that Microsoft has done. We've taken all this kind of machine intelligence work and productized it so well, but we really want to make that accessible to anybody who wants to take advantage of cutting-edge machine intelligence work.
Okay. Now, so Anna, let's like suppose we just go a little bit once just one step deeper from what you just told us about using these APIs. So they are all APIs, they're kind of REST APIs, and I'm assuming there is some sort of a framework that's available, a .NET or JavaScript. What do you have out there? Like, how do application developers actually, once they've passed the POC phase where they've gone to the portal and tried out a few things and they want to actually integrate it with their application, what would be the next step for them there?
Absolutely. So like you said, they're all cloud services, all REST APIs. We've been trying to comply with the Microsoft One API design requirements. For application developers going to the next step, there's a variety of SDKs available for the different APIs. It varies a little bit per API, sort of what's there, but we do have a number of SDKs and actually a lot of sample code also up. So the easiest way to see what's available is to go to our website, and there's a Developers tab. And under that tab, I think you can click on, I want to say samples, but we, oh yeah,
Looks like
SDKs and
this.
samples. And there's a whole sort of filtered thing that will show you all the stuff that's available, both stuff that we've written and actually a lot of awesome third-party developers have written samples that we've actually highlighted through this site.
I see, and so the SDKs are, what do we have them in .NET now, and what are the other options?
It's like Python's out there as well.
Oh,
Yeah, so
that's
it
cool.
really depends on, with 22 APIs, it depends on the API, but we have stuff across, JavaScript, Node.js, PHP, Python, some samples, I think, for Xamarin, a bunch of different things.
Okay. And like from a like I guess typically, if a website were offering, like the company's website were offering some of these, or you're using some of these APIs, I suppose they would, they might have multiple sessions going on and things like that. So, is there something special that application developers need to do to, to kind of maintain like a specific user session? Is there some kind of session construct that's used in these APIs? How do they, because application user might be go through a particular workflow over a period of time, and how does that, like, how does the APIs connect to that?
So most of the services, with some exceptions, are sort of memoryless. So you send and or sorry, stateless. Long day. You send an image up once, and that's it. And you get a result. So for most of the APIs, there kind of isn't that need for a context. The one flag that I would make for our listeners is that there are kind of transactions per second limits. For the APIs, and all that is kind of flagged on the pricing page.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. So in the pricing page, I mean, it's pretty, there's a lot of services, right? So there's a lot of, and each one's, got its own little thing about how many transactions per month or per second or all those kind of different things. My question is, when someone starts putting an app together, maybe using two or three of these services, is how do they monitor those like transactions per second? Is there an easy way from the API to know like, oh, I'm getting close to it, or be alerted? Like I'm thinking about an enterprise, so they don't hit some limit or something, or what happens when they do hit the limit too? Does it just throw
A throwing
404s or
error. I think, you know, we sort of rely on developers to kind of track their overall usage. To the best of my knowledge, right now, we don't kind of return a "you're getting close" kind of information.
Okay. Not even like I was just wondering if it was like surfaced through the pricing portal and stuff. We've just done a bunch of enhancements there to surface more, and maybe this will be plugged into there soon for that
It's
stuff.
something we're looking at, kind of how best to
Yep.
surface that kind of information, sort
Cool.
of quota usage.
Great. So right now, I mean, what would you say is the most popular of the 22 APIs?
So we have a couple that are quite popular. You know, there's a lot of usage of our Face API. A lot of people are interested in being able to identify, you know, who is a person, or like find faces in a photo. Louis is super popular, especially people that are looking at bots. There's kind of great tie-ins with bot framework there. You know, a lot of interest in text analytics, emotion, speech. So, you know, it's sort of funny that there's a bunch of kind of these APIs that are breaking out in different niches.
You said text analytics. How does that fit into the APIs? Like, what's the use case there?
So the text analytics API lets you do sentiment analysis, key phrase identification, and language identification. So the sentiment analysis is kind of commonly used for reviews. So companies that have like a lot of reviews, they may want to find out, you know, what percentage of my reviews are positive, or how positive are
Oh,
they.
I see. Okay. That's cool. That's excellent. Wow.
Yeah, I think, you know, talking about the facial recognition, we're actually at my site in Charlotte. We're actually going to get, they're redoing our reception area, and one of the things they're putting in is, I think they call it the modern, something like modern, you know, sign-in or whatever for visitors. And I believe that's one of the things that they're going to implement as part of that kind of experience for people coming in to visit the site. Which that sounds like that's going to be pretty cool to see in action.
So Anna, I mean, you know, this is a public podcast, so I want to be make sure we don't give away any top secret stuff here, but what's anything new and exciting that our listeners can look forward to in these APIs or in the services in general?
So I think two things. One, you know, we're consistently improving these services. So part of the reason we've turned these into cloud services is that we're actually constantly improving the quality of the underlying technology of these different APIs. And then two, I think, you know, without sort of disclosing anything in particular that we're working on, I think a lot of the kind of work around customization and making these, you know, work better for lots of different specific types of scenarios will be exciting in the next couple of months.
Okay, I know the one thing that kind of I've seen a little bit is the limit on the number of intents, right, that we have today, and a lot of people are looking to see that lifted.
So a bunch of work is being done around Lewis to see how we can make this work better for scenarios where people have multiple intents.
Okay, great. That's really fantastic. Can you guys anything else for Anna?
No, this is really cool. I mean, I think what we probably ought to we'll keep you on the list, because I'd love to, you know, circle back in 6 months or a year and kind of see what you guys have learned in that amount of time. With, you know, again, you're ingesting tons and tons of feedback and data at this point, you know, at an exponential scale, I would assume. So.
I'd be delighted to come back. One last call out that I would be remiss not to say is that for all 22 APIs, you can actually try them out for free by going to microsoft.com/whack-cognitive. So you can try everything out for free.
That's great.
Cool.
I'll put that link in the show notes, Anna. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, great. It's great talking to you, Anna, and we'll look forward to seeing you again in a year or so, just to catch up and see how things are going there. And best of luck
Absolutely.
with all the rest of the work that you're doing on cognitive services.
Yeah, thanks,
Thank you
Anna.
very much.
Thanks, Anna. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.